Wednesday, July 11th. Oh, it's 7-Eleven. Do they still give out Slurpees on 7-Eleven? Is that still a thing? You guys know what I'm talking about? It used to be a thing when I was growing up that on 7-Eleven, you could get a free Slurpee over at 7-Eleven. I'm going to go check that out. There's a 7-Eleven a block down the road. I'm going to go check that out. The Better Life with Timothy Lawson. Hope everybody's well. I planned on having this out yesterday. Had full intention of hitting my Tuesday personal deadline. And then remembered, oh, there's a blackjack tournament. And I was like, I'll just do it after that. And then I came back from the blackjack tournament that didn't happen because they only had 14 people register for the tournament when they needed 36 to make it happen. So I got my full refund and left with no blackjack tournament. So I need to vent real quick about MGM National Harbor. So I often ride my motorcycle there, and I park in the self-parking garage because they won't, like most places, they won't let me park my motorcycle up near valet, even with a tip or a fee or anything like that. So I have to park in the self-parking garage, and the casino also won't let me take my helmet inside the casino. My bag's fine, but my helmet I can't take into the casino. I used to just bring it to coat check, but they've no longer put, like, there's rarely someone in coat check anymore. I guess I'm assuming maybe like Friday and Saturday nights there is now, but like when I've gone there for blackjack tournaments and such, there's nobody there. Which means I have to walk all the way across the entire property and up a level to get to the bell desk to check my helmet in with the bell desk and then go back and into the casino. And then when I'm done, go to the bell desk and walk, get my helmet and walk all the way back across the property to the parking garage. And it's annoying. It's super annoying, especially because I never think about it until I get there, and so it's never built into, like, my time. And so, when I want to be there at a certain time, I realize that, I have, like, you know, half a day's travel to get back to the other side of the casino to check in my helmet. But no blackjack tournament, but it'll be interesting. When they did their spring series, they had four tournaments in the spring series. I played in two of them. Both of those went off without a hitch. I think they just did 36 entrants, so I think that's the ceiling. I think they need at least 36, but I think they close it at 36. I'm hoping that moving forward that they can get those things going because it's a small field, so it'll be a nice experience. It'll be a good way to practice late tournament play. And then I got home and I was kind of in a bum mood I was in a bum mood already from work, and then the blackjack tournament didn't go off, and then I get home and I remember, oh, that's right, the Belgium-France game is on. And for those of you that follow me on Twitter, know that I took Belgium and France won. And I was just in a bad mood yesterday. And I was like, I probably shouldn't record because I don't want to come across as an old grouch. Maybe now I'm coming across as an old grouch right now. Maybe I'm... Maybe waiting a day was futile, but I went to Delaware on Sunday. I went out there to cash the tickets I had before and make my World Cup bets. The World Cup bets I made was Belgium, and then I tied up Belgium with England, and so both of those are no good. But on my way home, and this started like the 2 or 3 day frustration period. On my way home from the casino, it's like a 2 hour drive from between where I am and the casino. And on my way back, a guy pulls up to me. They're like, we hit traffic. Guy pulls up to me and he's like, "Hey, your taillights, like, there's nothing going on in your back lights. And I was like, oh. He's like, yeah, no tag lights, no taillights, nothing's happening. So I pull over and I fiddle with the car, right, try to replace the fuse and check the bulbs and stuff like that. And it's like 11 o'clock at night, right? I don't want to be doing this. None of the usual quick fixes on a problem like that were working, and I was super upset and super frustrated. And let me tell you the power of a podcast, and having a new episode of a podcast that you enjoy. I got back in my car after like a half an hour of fiddling with the fuse box and double checking to make sure everything was working again after I'd messed with it, and deciding to just turn my hazards on while I drive home. And I was super frustrated, and it was late, and I was getting tired. And what happened? Well, Cousin Vito decided to put out an episode late on a Sunday, and it was the first thing I saw when I got back into the car and started heading off. And it immediately took me out of my upset mode, and I was like, whatever, I'm gonna listen to some Vito. And I realized how cool that is. I imagine that that's something that other people have experienced before too. I've definitely, on days where my favorite podcasts are being released, been like desperate for entertainment and refreshing the feed every like 20 minutes to see if the new episode comes out. So I've been podcasting for a long time, and I guess maybe that's a part of podcasting I may have taken for granted, was just the morale boost that there is when your favorite podcast put out a new episode. So Vito, I know you said you've been busy lately, not caught up on podcasts, but I do appreciate the late Sunday episode, and it did some good, sir. I don't really have anything else gambling-related to report. I'm headed to Atlantic City for Oceans AC, for the Oceans Coast to Coast event that's paired up with the Laughlin Group as well. I'm unsure of exactly what I'll be doing while I'm up there. I do intend to, I'm trying to get some quality time with Mr. Eric Rosenthal. I'm looking to show my wife around Atlantic City. It's been a long time since I've been there. I was there, like when I was there, I wasn't even collecting chips yet. So all the places that I gambled at then, I didn't keep a chip. And so I'll be on that mission as well. Looking to meet new people. I haven't met a handful of people that are going to be there. I know Julian's going to be there. I haven't met him. Epic Esquire, I never met him. So I know there's going to be a handful of people that I haven't met yet. And I will definitely get down on some group gaming. So if you're looking to throw dice, I will. I don't know if I'll do a ton of gaming while I'm there, since I do sort of want to treated as sort of a weekend away with the wife, but I'm sure that I'm sure she'll understand when I prime myself away to go throw some dice with the group. But if you're gonna be there, let me know if you want to grab coffee, or if you want to just say hello or something like that. Let me know. It'll be a nice relaxing weekend, and I'm looking forward to it. So this week's interview is with Sean Chafin. Sean Chafin spent his summer out in Las Vegas covering the WSOP. He is also the host of True Gambling Stories, the podcast. You may have seen him tweet about this recently. He just released his new episode on the Nevada State Prison Casino. Very, very fascinating story. He has an episode on Dead Man's Hand, the shot that killed Wild Bill Hickok. He's got stories on Doyle Brunson and TJ Cloutier from their times of gambling down in Dallas. They have the story of the gentleman that rolled for over 3 hours at the California. A lot of cool stories, and if you're a gambler of any type, whether you're a poker player, sports bettor, table player, slot player, doesn't matter, maybe you like the ponies, I think we all can appreciate a a good gambling story from any other aspect of gambling. And that podcast is definitely that. So Sean is going to talk to us about his introductory to gambling. The WSOP is going to talk to us about some of our favorite poker players, and then about true gambling stories and how he curates those stories, produces them, and the adventure that has been. Enjoy. Last name pronounced Chafin, is that right?
That's right, Chafin.
Oh, all right, Sean Chafin, host of True Gambling Stories podcast. Sir, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm glad to be on. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You are currently out on the West Coast. You've been covering the WSOP. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been here for about 3 weeks with about two more to go for me. And I was here for the World Poker Tour about a week before that, too.
Yeah. What are you doing, I guess, out there covering the WSOP? You're covering results. You're talking to players about their strategies. What is coverage of the WSOP, such a huge event like that, look like?
Well, I work a lot for Poker News. I'm not one of the live reporters. I kind of do the feature writing about players and events and things like that. So, you know, if there's an interesting player or winner or, you know, somebody with an interesting story, that's kind of what I look for. And it's been going really well. I've had some pretty good stories. You know, we had a guy like Leon Shattuck who talked about, you know, he's an old school gambler. He was wearing a jacket from the Stardust, you know. The next day he had a jacket from the Mint he was wearing. Really cool guy. But, you know, I wrote about him, and he had met his wife out here in Vegas playing poker in the early 90s. They got married. And anyway, it was kind of about how he had to give up poker and go back and take care of her. She was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. And it was a really cool story and just kind of a nice human interest story. So those are kind of the things that I do.
Yeah. Okay. Before we get more into your career and your you as a journalist and the podcast and stuff, let's talk about gambling, especially your introduction to it. Do you remember your first exposure to gambling? So maybe not when you started gambling, but the first time you saw it.
Probably the first time I saw it is my dad had probably a monthly game, maybe twice a month. My dad and his friends at UPS, he retired from UPS, they always had a little poker game going on. And so that's how I kind of started getting into it and playing poker. I'd play with them once in a while, my brother and I would. And that game still goes on today, and I still play with them quite a bit. And then also every summer, you know, I was in Texas, and it's hot in Dallas in the summer. So we'd take a lot of vacations in the mountains up in New Mexico, you know, Red River, Albuquerque, and we'd visit the horse races too.
Oh, sure.
So we made it a point to go to the horse races every summer, it seemed like. And so we'd do a lot of horse gambling, horse wagering also.
Yeah.
So those were the two things that really got me into it. And I really like both of them. I like horse racing, and I like poker a lot still to this day.
You still bend on the ponies?
Yeah, once in a while. I'm not doing very well. I didn't do very well on the Triple Crown, but, you know, it's not always about winning. It's just kind of about having a little action, having some fun.
Yeah. It's so funny. A friend of mine, Mark Duvall, who co-host of You Can Bet on That, we were in the race book up at Foxwoods earlier this year, and we were joking around about how, you know, at a craps table, right, we're throwing around money like it's cool, like let me get a you know, a six and eight, and you're just throwing out bets. And then here we are at the race book, like sweat. I don't know, like we're sweating, like, what, we're gonna put our $2 wager on, right? It's funny how as soon as you enter a new game, especially one you're not familiar with, or I mean he's more familiar than I am, but you know, risk all of a sudden seems different. It's interesting, but betting on horses has purely been entertainment for me. I wouldn't be able to, you know, my approach is I choose the coolest name with the middle odds. I find like a horse in the middle that has a cool name, and that's the horse I'm rolling with.
That's what's fun about horse racing. You can, you know, bet just a little bit and, you know, have a chance to win some real money. And if you don't, it's not a whole lot lost. It's just fun, you know, go out with your family, friends, whatever.
Yeah.
Good night out.
Yeah, I mean, if you went to a day of races and made one $2 bet on each race, you're out, what, $20 at the end of the day if you didn't win any of them, right?
I mean,
you had excitement and action in each race. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun to watch those horses too. They're, you know, pretty amazing animals.
Yeah. So
jockeys don't get enough credit either. You talk about some athletes who really put their life at risk. The jockeys in horse racing are some of the most amazing athletes to me.
Sure. How did you go from then being into poker to being inside covering poker, being a journalist, a storyteller?
Well, my background is in newspapers. I graduated from Texas A&M with a degree in journalism. So my background is newspaper writing, newspaper editing. And then for 13 years, I was a teacher who did freelance writing on the side. Up until probably about a month ago, a little over a month ago, I was a high school teacher. I taught newspaper and yearbook. And my freelance writing business just kept growing and growing and getting bigger, and I decided to, you know, branch out and do that full time. But I had been working a lot in freelance writing up until then too. I don't write just about poker and gambling, but it just kind of got bigger and bigger, that part of it too. So that's kind of how I got into it. I used to just come out here maybe a week at a time and pick some events that interested me and look for some players to write about. And sometimes I'd write a feature story about, you know, a guy for his hometown magazine or something like that. And I'd also write a travel article maybe about Las Vegas. One time I interviewed Rick Harrison down at Pawn Stars. Just kind of anything that interested me. And then as that kind of got bigger, Poker News asked me to come out here and work for them last summer. So I did that for 4 weeks. They brought me back this summer, and now I'm doing it for 5 weeks. And then I'm also doing stuff like that for the World Poker Tour now a little bit as well.
You mentioned Rich Harrison. I'm sure you saw the news.
I haven't seen the news.
Oh, no. I'm really sorry to be the one to break this to you. Old man has passed away.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I hate to hear that. I didn't interview him, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Rich Harrison. No,
Rick Harrison. The bald guy. I didn't interview the old man, but that's terrible. That's awful.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Well, I apologize for breaking the news on a podcast to you, but
man, well, you know, that's cycle of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Rick Harrison, how is he as a character, by the way?
Man, he was such a nice guy, really interesting. Just that whole world down there is unique. I mean, it's pretty interesting. The people just line up outside the door waiting to get in there to check it out. You know, look at all the, I don't know, coins and gold and whatever. So he's kind of really built this little mini industry.
Yeah.
And the tourists line up, and it's not in the, you know, most convenient place, I would say, in Las Vegas for a visitor. But people like to go down there and check it out.
And we're getting a little off topic here, but I'm now just curious, especially since you got a chance to interview him. Do you know, like, how did they sell that idea to, was it there, did they sell it to, who is it, AMC that does it? Who does their, who's, when's that?
I think it's A&E? No, it's a History Channel, Channel.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, like, do you know, like, how this idea got sold? Because I think it had to have taken some pretty good marketing to convince that a pawn shop could be such a huge franchise like that.
I want to say Rick had done, there had been some kind of documentary about his pawn store, like a short little TV documentary, I think. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that's how it kind of got this germ of an idea started. And so I think he pitched the History Channel. It seemed pretty good, pretty fitting for a History Channel. There's not always a lot of history on that channel anymore.
Yeah,
it's like
aliens, right?
Stuff like that now. But anyway, it seemed like a fit, and I guess fans really love it. People love it. Kids love it. And it's just so popular now, his little pawn store over there. He's into gambling a little bit too. He plays blackjack a little bit, poker a little bit.
I was going to ask, is he a gambler?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a gambler as well.
Okay, I like that. Do you play anything else? You mentioned races, or you mentioned horses. You mentioned poker. Do you play anything else in the casino?
I like to play craps a lot.
Well, you're talking to the right audience, sir. What's your approach?
I usually play the pass line and the odds, and I like to do the come bets as well. Sometimes I'll play some bets, but I don't get too extravagant. I kind of try to play on the ones that are in, they're obviously they're not in your favor, but at least closer to break even. But when I first started playing craps, I was 21. My dad brought me out here to Las Vegas, and we stayed at the Stardust. I don't know if you remember that one.
I'm familiar with the property. It was gone by the time I visited Vegas for the first time.
Yeah, it wasn't in great shape when I visited either. It was the one that was owned by the mob.
Yeah.
I think it was the place, if you've seen Casino, I think it's that casino.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was in pretty rough shape. But we went down to the Holiday Inn Boardwalk. That's another one that's not here anymore. And they had a tiny little craps table, and that's kind of how I learned to play, just sitting there watching some players. I think I won like $65, and it was like I had won a fortune. I couldn't believe it. So it was a pretty good initiation into craps. I mean, I was just playing the pass line, really.
Yeah.
And, man, profited of $65 one night. I thought I had won, you know, $1 million.
You're like, how did casino stay open with this kind of action?
Right, you know. Well, that one didn't stay open, so maybe that was it.
You broke it back. You shut down the Stardust, Sean. You're at the Hollywood. That's right. You said you were at the
Holiday Inn. It's Holiday not Inn. Even the Holiday Inn Boardwalk. Tiny little place. Had $2 hot dogs. I remember that, too.
Well, that's something you can still get in Vegas, right? You can find some spots with $2 hot dogs. You have to go to South Point for it. But
occasionally, but man, it's a lot more expensive now in Vegas than in those days.
Yeah, no kidding.
These resort fees are so frustrating.
Yeah, that's you know, let's stay positive here. you're right. That's one reason why I continue, even though total rewards, you know, the rewards in 2018 for diamond status was scaled back a little bit. Not having comped resort fees is one of the things that keeps me loyal to total rewards. What do you like about Vegas? Like, what are some of the things that, like, each time you go to Vegas, you're like, I love this?
I don't know. I like the atmosphere, but, you know, I've been here so much doing this, it's kind of, the luster wears off a little bit. It's fun to people watch, for sure.
Yeah.
You see all kinds of interesting people. And I kind of like, when you're gambling, you get to know some interesting people that maybe you would have never met. I had a good time one time with a bunch of Australian people, and their Australian people seem to be really friendly. But I kind of like just the camaraderie. There's always something going on that's kind of neat. I don't really like the heat.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from Dallas, but and it's hot there, but we don't get 112, 115. It's crazy hot here. But in general, it's just, you know, it's kind of neat seeing people from all over the world and stuff, too.
Sure. You got there for the WSOP. Did you play in any events, or were you just covering it?
No, just covering it. I don't have the bankrolls these guys have. You look around, you're like, how do these guys get all this money?
Yeah.
But if you're covering for Poker News, you can't really play any. I don't pretend to be a player either. You know, I'm just a guy who likes poker, likes to tell stories. So that's kind of my role. I have no interest in being a professional poker player or going out on the poker tour. That kind of risk would drive me crazy, honestly.
Sure.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was just in Vegas, two weeks ago? I guess it was just a week ago. Holy smokes. Feels like it was way longer. and we were sitting next to Greg Merson's father. And like, it wasn't until like hour four of the 5-hour trip that he mentioned like, oh yeah, my son won the main event a few years ago. And I was like, wait, what? Who? And it was funny how he really buried the lead on his relation to Vegas, but he was flying out there for the senior event, which I didn't know the WSOP had one. I don't know how well he did, but that's, You talking about, don't know how people like, yeah, I wonder if Greg fronted his dad's stake money for the senior event.
Yeah, I don't know. There's actually a seniors event for 50 and older.
Yeah.
And then there's a super seniors event, I think it's either 60 or 65 and older. And an interesting thing is the guy who won last year also won the previous year. So there was a guy who had a chance for a three-peat this year in the Super Seniors event. He didn't make it, but man, what a player. He's a physician from Pennsylvania. Huh. And he had won the last 2 years in a row, like a $450,000 over the last 2 years. Pretty crazy.
Do they have a defibrillator at every table for the Super Senior event?
No, I don't think – no, but it's a 10 a.m. start, and they usually don't do that. But you see some really nice guys. I kind of like it because you get to see a lot of guys in cowboy hats. And from being from Texas, I think that's kind of neat. You bring a little of the Old West back to poker.
Speaking of cowboy hats, Doyle Brunson retired this year during the WSOP, or announced his retirement. Has he finished actually playing his events?
I don't think he really said he's retired officially. He said this is probably his last tournament. Kind of people got on the bandwagon a lot, referred to his retirement. I guess in a way it could be, but he never said officially that he's retired from tournament poker. A lot of people don't think that he's going to really be retired. If he's around and sees a tournament that interests him, he still might jump in. But
yeah, okay. Yeah,
probably retired, but not necessarily for sure. If you know Doyle, if something comes up, he might jump in it. What's amazing about him is he's still playing the biggest games in the world at the Bellagio every single day.
Huh.
He plays a $300,000 buy-in, $500,000 buy-in, something crazy like that. The big game over there. And when I talked to him at one point, he said he had played 31 days in a row in the last year.
Wow. That's impressive. I think it's hard to believe that I don't know. I don't know how he views his life in poker. I can't imagine him playing at that clip and then just ending. Like I imagine.
Well, he's not ending his cash game play. He's still playing.
Oh, okay.
He's not really retired. He says he gets into the Bellagio about 1 o'clock, stays till about 9 o'clock playing. So he plays about 8 hours a day, the biggest stakes available.
Yeah.
And he said he got out of tournament play because his wife is not in the best of health.
Oh, okay.
And she will wait up for him, and he doesn't want her staying up late. So that's kind of why he's out of tournament poker. The one he played a week or so ago was a deuce to seven triple draw, and it allowed day two entry. So he could only he got the chance to just play 2 days that way, and so he jumped into that when he made the final table. I think he finished sixth, which is amazing. You play one event and make a final table.
Yeah.
So
very
he
well.
Says he's out of it, but we'll see. What's interesting, I believe 84, and he said, I just like to play still. Keeps my mind sharp. Age is – he doesn't feel old. Age is just kind of a thing in someone's mind to him. So he's a really inspirational guy if you ever get a chance to listen to him.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you clearing that up. I feel like, I'm just seeing it in my feed, right, as I'm scrolling through. And the messaging that I've gotten from, like, headlines and people's commentary was that he was wrapping up on poker this year. But it sounds like it may just be tournament games, and we could still see him at the Bellagio grinding out a profit in the cash games.
Yeah, he's at the Bellagio probably just about every day. I mean, he's not retiring from cash game play.
Yeah. So tell us about your podcast, True Gambling Stories. I recently listened to the Dead Man's Hand one yesterday. Well done. It was really cool listening to that story. One that, of course, I knew in legend but didn't know much of the history on, so it was really fun learning about that. What inspired this approach to a gambling podcast?
Well, I'm a fan of true crime stories. I like 48 Hours and Dateline. I like to read books about true crime a little bit and history. So I thought maybe we could bring these poker and gambling stories kind of in a narrative format in some kind of podcast. And I pitched the idea to Sarah Herring over at Poker News, and they were really into it. And so we kind of just got it started this year. And Our first episode was one I had written about, and really, it's just such a crazy story. It's about the old California casino down in downtown Vegas. It's not quite on the on Fremont Street, kind of out of the way, a little hole in the wall kind of place. It's owned by Boyd Gaming, and for years they've been marketing to Hawaiian players, and they'd have junkets where they'd bring in players from Hawaii. And so the first one was about an event in 1989 where Stanley Fujitake from Honolulu flew in. You know, he plunked his money down on the craps table, $100, whatever, something like that. And he didn't crap out for over 3 hours.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of served as my inspiration to kind of get it going. He didn't crap out for 3 hours. He made $30,000 that night, but other players at the table made over $100,000. The casino started running out of chips. They were writing IOUs, basically. Gamblers from all the other properties were coming in and watching the action. Back then, they had like a mirror on the ceiling above the craps table so you could watch what was going on. It was just such a crazy story. And now they have this they have the Golden Arm Club down there where if you roll just for I think it's 30 minutes or an hour.
I think I think the Golden Arm Club might actually be a total number of rolls. So I think it's quantitative.
Whatever it is, it's named after him. He was called the Golden Arm, and they actually have a bust of his hand there with his original dice. And so it's just kind of a neat story, and we just kind of kept going from there.
Yeah, I think it's 50. No, you might be right.
I think it's an hour, actually. I think
You're right. You're right. That property, it's the Golden Arm Club is hour plus dice throwing. There's another property, I think, somewhere down. There's another property in Vegas that has something similar in it. It's like if you like 50 rolls or more or something like that. But yeah, every craps player just dreams of having a hot roll, right? And we consider a hot roll to be like a half hour, right? You hold on the dice for that long. You had a really good roll. Everybody at the table probably won. 3 hours. I mean,
yeah,
at some point, I wonder. Like, it's fun, but at some point, do you get bored? Do you want to, like, I got shit to do today? Like, I only planned on playing for an hour. I'm 2 hours into a hot roll. Cancel the plans, I guess. I'm going to keep rolling.
The property lost about $1 million that night, but they've used it as a marketing gimmick through all these years. You know, they get a chance to be the Golden Arm and Stanley, the Golden Arm Club. It's probably made up for it in that amount of time just in marketing dollars. You know, it's kind of a big thing over there. And that what's cool is that was Sam Boyd's first casino, too. And it almost failed until he started marketing to Hawaiians. And all these Hawaiians still come there today.
Interesting. What's your Vegas is sort of lackluster to you anymore, but do you have any favorite properties?
I like the Venetian. I think it's pretty neat inside. I like to just visit downtown a little bit once in a while. When I'm here writing, I don't get to go out too much. I'm mostly writing stories every day. So once you're in there in the poker room for hours and hours, you kind of don't want to go out too much. You know, I like the MGM Grand. It's a pretty cool place. Especially if you want to bet some sports in there, they got a pretty nice sports book. But I don't have too many favorites, I guess. The Venetian I always really liked. I think it's a neat property.
Okay. Something I've been wondering, and since you're in the poker world, you can probably answer this. You always see people like on Twitter being like, "Oh, I just met Phil Hellmuth. He's way nicer in person than that." Is that true? Is Phil Hellmuth way nicer in person than people would think after watching him on television?
Yeah, most of the poker world are pretty nice guys, really.
Yeah.
Most of them are easy to talk to. You know, you can sit there and watch Phil play, and he'll come over and take pictures with, you know, people passing by. And so will Daniel Negreanu and a lot of these guys. So I would say, in general, most of them are pretty, pretty nice guys, you know, don't have an edge to him, you know. Feels pretty crazy on TV, you know, when you see him, you know, take a bad beat or busting out or something like that. But honestly, he's usually a pretty nice guy. Yeah.
Okay. Which do you have players that you particularly like following, both for poker reasons and because of their story?
Jeez, that's a tough question. I don't know. I guess there's a few that I like to check out a lot. I mean, some of the old timers I like to follow, like Doyle. Doyle's still 84 on Twitter, by the way. I don't know if you follow him or not, but he's amazing. He tweets almost every day, you know?
Yep, I do. I think I follow him, yeah.
I follow some of these bigger name guys just to kind of see how they're going, but I also like some of the guys that are new and recreational players. Those are the guys I really like to write about. Just somebody with an interesting story. Too often you see some of these guys that don't have much personality just sit in a hoodie and sunglasses, but most of them, you know, are always willing to talk, and some of them you can bring a good story out of.
Yeah. So as a journalist, how do you approach that's the right question. How am I trying to ask this? You said you like covering some of the recreational players, some of the smaller players. How do you then tell that story, or what do you look for in a story to ensure that because the name recognition isn't there, that you're going to be able to deliver something and keep the audience's attention?
Well, I'm a feature writer, so I try to ask pretty good questions. I've gotten pretty good at that, I guess. I'm, you know, just looking for some kind of kernel of or nugget that I can expand on, like Mr. Shattuck's story, or I just wrote about Seth Davies, and I talked about his baseball career, and he had 2 years of shoulder surgery and kind of took over playing online poker after that, and he had to go after Black Friday he had to move, and I talked about, you know, where he traveled to. He had to live 3 years in Playa del Carmen and play poker. Kind of a tough life, huh?
Yeah.
And
right.
So I always just look for something unique or different, something about him. Everybody kind of has a story. Sometimes it's a little harder to draw it out of them, but that's kind of how I approach it. I ask some questions that'll make me kind of lead me in that direction. I also get some pretty good tips from readers by now, too. I have one I'm going to write about at the beginning of July. A lady and her son are both playing in the main event. He just turned 21 and won a big satellite to play in the main event. So they're going to – mom and son are both playing in the main event. I thought that would be pretty cool.
What psychological impact do you think you would have if you're at a table like mid tournament, late tournament, but before the bubble, and you're at a table with your mom, and she bluffs the crap out of you, and you now have to live for the rest of your life knowing that your mom busted you out of a major tournament because she lied to you. What do you think that
That'd be a pretty good story.
Yeah, that would be a good story. I think you're looking for that, right? You're hoping that's going to happen now?
Yeah, it'd be pretty long odds that they both end up at the same table, but you never know. It could happen for sure.
Yeah. What do you got going on, or what stories are you working on for the podcast? Anything you can tell us about? What stories can we look forward to?
The next one, and I'm actually doing some script writing today and tomorrow, is about the Nevada State Prison. They actually had a casino that was run by inmates inside the prison for about 30 years. They had craps tables, blackjack tables, poker. They even had a sports book, which is pretty amazing because I don't think they had a television. So why would you bet on sports if you can't watch it? But I heard they had a phone line maybe running through to get results. But it's a pretty crazy story. And I mean, they had their own tokens, like for chips, that they could cash in at the prison and put credit on their account. And it's pretty interesting. I think that's going to be a really good one. So that's what I'm working on for July.
Okay. Tell me about in your own gambling life, and then it can be in poker, horses, anything at the casino. Tell me about a big win or a painstaking loss that you remember that you can share with us.
Let's see, big win. I had a good night at the craps table in Shreveport one time, and won $1,500. That was pretty good for me on a $5 table.
Wow, on a $5 table, that's very impressive.
Yeah, and I won a couple little tournaments up at up in Oklahoma at some casinos there playing poker.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'd have any massive scores, like any five or six figure scores. No, that's not me. But, you know, here and there, I'm not a huge bankroll player, not a high stakes player. I was going to get back to the podcast, too, though. I was going to tell you, since you were talking about Doyle, anybody out there who's interested in kind of old time Texas road gambling ought to check out the second episode where we talk about in Dallas on Greenville Avenue, which is kind of a hot spot in Dallas, lots of restaurants and bars and stuff like that. Well, in the 70s and 80s, there was an underground poker room there called the Amvets Club. And all those guys you see from, you know, the early 70s used to play there. And one of them was Dole Brunson and TJ Cloutier, too. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. But both of them played there and they talked about it. And they got robbed there one night. So Doyle talks a little bit about life in the old days and how you had to not only find action to make some money, you also had to keep your money by avoiding getting robbed or by avoiding getting hijacked. So he talks about getting robbed at knife point one night, and TJ has some really interesting stories too. So check out Doyle on episode two if you're really into that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Very cool.
But as far as big scores, I wouldn't say anything huge, you know. I just kind of I'm more low stakes guy. I'm not the guy playing the 10,000 PLO like they're playing over at the at the World Series today.
Yeah. You're writing about the, you know, you're writing feature pieces and profile pieces, but you're around poker, you're in the poker room, I'm sure you're observing a lot of what's going on. Have you noticed any of your personal game getting better from just being in that community for so long?
I will say that's true. Yeah, seeing so many theories and hearing people talk about how to play hands a little bit. Yeah, you do see your game getting a little better. I like to play online a little bit too. I'll play on WSOP.com while I'm here. I think in September I'm going to be covering something in Atlantic City. I may play up there a little bit.
Okay.
But I would say yes, even just playing in my home game, I notice my game a little better. I think about things a little different ways than I did before. So that's something I would say is definitely true. You watch enough poker, you're around it enough, I think you see your game get better.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned some of the players that you really like. Who, if you could choose, if you entered a tournament and you could, like, hope to be at the same table as any player, who would sort of be, like, your dream situation to be like, oh, I played poker with this person?
I've never really thought. I guess it'd be cool to be around, play against Phil Hellmuth. Maybe Scotty Wynn would be fun, or Doyle.
Scotty Wynn, sure.
But if I'm trying to win, I don't think I would want them at my tables, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm good enough to think that I'm making it far in the tournament anyway. So if I'm –
yeah.
You know,
Jean-Robert Ballon, he's a pretty fun guy. I interviewed him and did we do this feature called The Hand I'll Never Forget, and I did one on him about – he was stuck $1 million, I guess, overseas in a game and had to bat. Then he lost another one, so he was stuck – $1.25 million and how he battled back and got out of the black and that. So he'd be fun to be around. Maybe Ellie Alezra would be fun.
Sure.
A lot of these guys are pretty fun to be around. But, like, yeah, if I'm trying to win some money, I don't know if I want them at my table.
Yeah.
That's when I want the newbies.
Right. Oh, I definitely don't want to be at a cash game with any of those people. But I suppose if I'm going home from a tournament, I guess I'd rather have the let me tell you about how Danny Negreanu busted me, and rather instead of I made a bad mistake against this person. I don't know.
Yeah, Daniel would be fun too.
Yeah, Sean, we'll play a little fun little game on here called Bet Your Life on It. I'm going to give you a scenario and two options. You choose which side you would bet your life on in a hypothetical scenario, of course. If we know that Utah is a pretty conservative state, but if maybe legislation passed through when they decided to open up to new ideas, which venue do you think would be opened first? Do you think we'll first see a legal casino opened in the state of Utah or a legal weed dispensary?
Probably legal casino.
Okay. Is he just going with it?
I don't know why. I mean, I don't think either one of them are going to be legalized there anytime soon.
Right.
A lot of people from Utah do move here to Vegas, and there's a lot of dealers from Utah. But I don't know much about Utah. I haven't really been there, but I would assume neither one would probably be legal anytime soon.
Sure. Okay. Sean, I really appreciate your time. It was fun talking about poker and gambling, all these cool stories that you get to write about and talk to these poker players about. If anybody was curious about your podcast we talked about, True Gambling Stories, where can they check that out?
It's on iTunes. You can go to truegamblingstories.com. It's on Audio Boom. It's on Spreaker. It's on, you know, all the big ones. Almost every major site. You can always just go to pokernews.com too and click on podcasts. I also have a book if you like those kind of stories called Raising the Stakes. You can get it on Amazon as well. So, you know, it's a great podcast. I think so. My editor, Robert Marino, he adds in all the sound effects and he does a great job on the show. So it's once a month. Maybe down the line we might go twice a month. Right now just putting it out once a month is a lot of work. But
yeah.
Check it out if you're into poker, gambling, you know, history, true crime kind of stuff. I think you'll like it.
Of course. And you are on Twitter at Poker Traditions and the podcast is at Gambling Pod. By the way, how is that available?
I don't know. It was. So I thought that was good. True Gambling Stories was, and I don't really know who has it, but Gambling Pod was available. So I figured we'd use that.
I think True Gambling Stories is too long. I think that's why that wasn't available. I think
maybe
it's too,
so.
Yeah, it's too many characters for a Twitter handle. Very well. Well, Sean, thank you so much for your time. And I know my audience is going to check out your story because we all love gambling stories. And maybe I'll run into you one of these days in Vegas.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
One of these days we'll hear a True Gambling Stories, the craps player that always yelled Muckleshoot. I want to thank everybody for the support on Patreon. It's been humbling to get that sort of support. If I'm going to start posting bonus content that is finally coming. I am going to be posting probably an audio clip a week, and that might turn into a video segment a week further down the road. But bonus content is coming to Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. And any move that I'm making in sports, I will post there as well. I'm not a professional sports bettor. I'm not a handicap or selling picks or anything, but I do know that people are always looking for opinions and insight, and you know, I consider myself a sharp bettor for the most part, and so I know where I'm sharp, but I know where I'm not, and so I try to keep myself disciplined in there. And I've been posting all of my picks for the World Cup. Started out hot and been sort of fizzling away as the World Cup goes. I know it's a really hard sell for the Patreon, huh? But got to be honest. After the World Cup, we'll see. I'm not sure if there's going to be much going on for me sports wise. Probably MLS. I'm probably going to look towards Major League Soccer for some action until, of course, football season hits. And then, I mean, you know, what else are we doing than betting on football when that's around? The website should be up and running soon. Technically, it's up, but like there's like what, one post on it, so I don't promote it. But I am finally in the next 7 to 10 days going to have time to sit down and actually format the website and get all of the episodes posted on there as their own posts, get some pages on there, and update the merchandise. That's right, the merchandise page. Got some new shirts coming in for the Dice Throwers. It's a play on the Keep Calm. It's a play on the Keep Calm shirts. It says Keep Calm and Throw Dice. If you are a crafts player, if you enjoy such things, you might like this shirt. TheBetterLife.us/merch. That's TheBetterLife.us/merch. And there's a limited inventory right now, so if you wanna cop it, go check it out. If you have a gambling theme you'd like to see represented in a shirt, that is poker, sports, something like that, like you want a shirt that speaks to the three-card poker players or something like that, let me know on Twitter, @TheBetterLife. I'm wrapping up. It's time to get ready for my day. There's a promotion over at MGM that I think I might play. It's nice, easy. Like get 100 points or whatever like that, and you can get 100 points and You know, they give you a cool gift or something like that. I might run over there and take advantage of that. But other than that, I think World Cup is the way that the gambling will be happening in the future. Next week, I think we'll be on with Michael Traeger. I think that's coming up next. So if you're into comps and stuff like that, he's knowledgeable on said things. I'm Timothy Lawson. Good night. Good luck.